So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, babe.
I got a bag of candy for you. Tell you what I don't like them anyway. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll fill them up just one full. There's one for you. You don't need that old silly bag. It's broken. And I'll give them really one full. Oh, no, I want that one there. Those look good. One for you, too, there. Now, isn't that nice of me? That one, Joy. Oh, something new, something bright, something delicious. Oh, I just love it so much. But
thank you, Mr. Piper.
You're so welcome. Get out. Oh, you forgot this. Don't want to forget to... Goodbye!
That's right, goodbye.
Oh, something new.
Try the neighbors.
That's why they forgot the candy.
We got it,
we pulled it off. It took a year's worth of fun.
It's gonna work.
I hope Mr. Piper likes his chocolate-covered red pepper.
What's the matter? Roddy, what's the matter? What's this? What? Trick or treat, Roddy!
When my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
He did the monster mash. The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle.
Welcome to Review Away. My name is John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting. How are you doing, Wei?
I'm here. I'm well.
It's Halloween today, everyone, even though by the time you're listening to this, it is November the 2nd. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Saturday night's main event in 1985, the Halloween edition, aired on November 2nd, I believe. Days after Halloween.
That's odd.
So
figured they would do it before, but I guess they were so infrequent.
Yeah, because probably Saturday Night Live probably had a big Halloween edition the prior Saturday, and yeah, because they only got on the
true that. But
true that.
Yes, and a very nice costume you have on, John.
Thanks. I'm dressed as a white guy with Tap Out Energy Peach Mango.
Yeah,
here on Halloween.
And
how was your Halloween?
It hasn't happened yet. It's still Monday morning.
You didn't do anything on the weekend though?
No Halloween festivities. I worked.
How are you going to celebrate Monday night? Are you going to go out trick-or-treating?
No, I'll be watching Raw and doing a podcast.
Watching the Muppets. Yeah.
That's how I'll be celebrating.
Well, that's a fun Halloween.
That's not bad. It could be a lot worse. Yeah. I could be starving in Africa.
Wow.
I could be a starving child in Africa.
Halt.
Hey, what? People post photos all the time.
I went out to one place on Friday, and a guy at this club dressed up as Superman in a wheelchair. It's Christopher Reeve.
Oh, that's okay. Superman in a wheelchair. He should be in a coffin now, underground.
He has passed away.
Yeah. It's an inaccurate. I'm
surprised I didn't see any Steve Jobs people.
Sure. Maybe that's too soon.
People don't care.
The autobiography came out. So, yeah, maybe that's... Yeah.
Are you going to read his autobiography?
I am.
Dude, I've read so much about Steve Jobs in the last, 3 weeks that it's like I'm feeling the need to convert to an Apple.
Mm-hmm. What? No. I thought you were going to say that was turning you off. I feel like that would turn me off.
No, it hasn't. It's actually, I don't know. I feel I'm just not a... I've been a PC forever.
I just feel I'm
limiting myself on a PC.
I'm a Mac guy, I've been a Mac guy my whole life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Never PC? Even in school?
No, never.
School,
maybe
you would have used
at
PC,
work,
right?
At work.
Yeah. PC got to the schools.
Yes. I hate anything to do with, cults. And this Mac thing is really starting to seem like a cult.
No, it's
at
not.
This point. But I'm not a fan of, certain things that they're doing, with the iTunes, forcing the iTunes store to open every time I open up the application, or putting that app store in there, right in my OS. I'm not a fan of that. I don't like things like that. Nonetheless, the products are very reliable, and they're very good.
I am 100% flipping over. Once the 4S is available here in Canada, I'm definitely getting rid of my BlackBerry. I'm just so sick of it. Hate it.
Yeah. Well, you'll be able to listen to Review Raw live.
On Stitcher.com.
Yes. Is it live? Is it live?
Not live, no. Okay. It's when we post it on iTunes, it also goes on to Stitcher, and Stitcher is...
Some people have asked about getting StickCam live on iPhone. I don't know if that's been working out or not.
Yeah, maybe someone can post a message on the Facebook page and tell us if that is possible. I don't know, nor can we check, really, if we're doing it live.
Because neither of us have iPhones.
That's another obstacle.
I feel like I'm really missing out on like the next generation of technology by not having one of these things.
Have you considered an iPhone? Is that something...
Absolutely. I can't. I still really like the BlackBerry's keypad, though.
The keypad is nice, I agree. I still have the rollerball on mine, which drives me nuts. I'm really not a fan of it. Yeah. And I just feel that I don't... I guess I could use my BlackBerry for more, like, app-wise. It just feels that, like...
No, you can't.
The iPhone was made for apps, you know? It was made to do more than just... I just feel BlackBerry, it's just, like, it's nuts and bolts,
and
you know?
And RIM's going to go out of business.
They're
soon,
fucked,
so,
dude.
So you're not going to have any support for this thing.
My dad... Like, he's not, like, big into stocks, but, like, 2 months ago, just bought a bunch of RIM stock. And I was like,
oh, no.
What horrible timing, Dad.
Yeah.
Just terrible timing.
Yeah.
Update on our archive system, folks. I have been working furiously at this. I came in on Saturday morning, and I worked on this for 3 hours.
To work on
the
archives?
Yeah, I did.
Why didn't you do it from home?
I had to come in here on Saturday morning to do a voiceover for the World Judo Championships.
Okay.
So I figured rather than come in for a 30-second voiceover, I will at least make it worth my while and do some work.
Wow.
Don't, please
quite
don't,
the attitude.
Don't think of John Pollock as a martyr. I was simply just, I was here, so I figured I'd do some work. Anyway, if you go into the archive section, you can either go at reviewaway.com, but right now the main section I'm working on is the podcast section at liveaudiowrestling.com, and you can go back. It's all in chronological order. Our first show was September 13th of 2009. That show, all the way up until December the 6th of 2009, all of those have been updated. So that's like the first like 10 shows, 10 to 15 shows are up there. And I'm furiously going through all these so that every single Review Away is going to be available to download, not just simply stream on the site or stream on Facebook. Because I know in the archive section right now, I think you can play it, but not download it. I'm not 100% sure. Because Facebook has that weird thing where you go to save it and it's just the HTML document. So I'm fixing all that. So the link goes to the law site where you can download the MP3 file.
That's great.
So it's a lot of tedious work, but I'm getting through it. I'm getting in a rhythm where I just, you know, pound away at this archive.
Yeah. Always.
Always pounding
away.
Always pounding away. So that's the update on the archives, folks. And once they are all done, I'll make a comprehensive document or just link is what I'm going for, which will list everything and just easily accessible.
An index.
That's what I want.
Okay.
That's all.
And then you'll get started on the law archives?
I'm working on that as well, too. But I'm trying to get Review Away done first and then go back to the law episodes.
Okay.
My long-term plan is to just get everything up there, but it's so time-consuming to, you know, take these old shows where it was like the Law and Review Away, separate them. A lot of our early shows, too, where it was just like the audio was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like, put it through Levelator, but then our studio sucked, and there was, like, this buzz to it. And so that gets increased when you put it through Levelator, gotta lower it a bit. So
we've been on a good roll. For these shows, we haven't had any, you know, too much happen.
No. The one I just uploaded was the Unforgiven 99 show, which we recorded 3 times.
Oh, that was a classic.
I still, whenever I hear that event or just see it, that's all I think of was that brutal day of doing that review 3 times. I can't even fathom now doing a review over again, much less doing it over twice.
Oh, it's going to happen. I'm sure it'll happen again. Stuff like this just, I guess, I feel like it tends to happen when you are severely underpowered. like under manned, manpowered.
There was the one review we did. It was like a day or two before our Bret Hart documentary was to start. We had like no time. It was like every second was just full of getting shit ready for this documentary. We did a WrestleMania, and we friggin' did it. And then there was some problem with it, either a skipping problem or it didn't record, something like that. And it was just like the worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
The absolute worst. But you know what was not the worst was Saturday night's main event from November the 2nd, 1985. And it was taped on Halloween night just a few days earlier in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the chocolate and steroid capital of the world.
The steroid capital, why?
This is where Dr. George Zahorian was the doctor that would be present at these shows, but was never... he was always the commissioned doctor, but never was hired specifically by the WWF. And then years later, when the commission was deregulating wrestling, they were... I think that's how... it turned out, and then the WWF, the onus was on them to hire Zahorian, and Linda McMahon got the tip-off that the federal government was investigating Zahorian, and they immediately ceased ties with Zahorian, because had they hired him, selecting him specifically to come work their event, knowing full well what this guy was doing at these events, that could have completely changed that federal trial in 94.
Wow.
So Hershey, Pennsylvania is a very interesting story.
I thought
in the
just,
history of the WWF.
I thought it was just chocolate.
Yeah, no. The kids in the audience were trick-or-treating while the boys in the back were doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting their candy.
Yeah.
So, this was a fun show to watch. 1985. This was, holy Christ, 26 years ago.
That's about right. You and I were about one. Yeah, we were
one year old.
Yeah, we were one. And at the time, Saturday night's main event just debuted, or recently debuted.
This was the third one.
The third one, okay. And these took place of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live would run, what, like three times a month typically, and then have a week off or something like that. And the ones where, yeah, the SNL was not a new show. They worked out this deal, Vince McMahon and Dick Ebersol, to have a Saturday Night Wrestling program in the Saturday Night Live time slot, and they did tremendously well.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was something completely new at the time. You were so used to your 1 hour of superstars,
yeah,
or whatever it was, your 1 hour of squash matches and maybe an interview here or there, but you rarely got big angles. You very rarely have ever got name talent facing one another.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal to have Saturday Night's main event, and this was obviously before you or I were watching wrestling programming, but I know at the tail end of Saturday Night's main event in like the early 90s, I mean, they would promote it, and I just like was so excited here to watch Saturday Night's main event.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
a kid,
I wonder if they can replicate something like this today for TV.
There's no way they can. Saturday Night's main event was brought back and it failed.
You know, we are seeing a very similar idea though, but in the UFC with their Fox specials.
Yeah.
The fact that you could see Cain Velasquez versus Junior Dos Santos live on free TV, it has, I'm assuming, a very much the same feel as these shows used to have.
Yes, I think so. I think right now, at least the regular mixed martial arts fan, it's like the novelty of simply seeing fights on TV has long worn off. Mm-hmm. It's now the specific fight, who's fighting, that's going to sway people. But
jobber matches aren't selling anymore.
No, they're not.
No.
No. Today, it's going to be really interesting when they move to Fox and how much of a new audience they can potentially attract. And that's a fight that, I mean, if you're not a mixed martial arts fan, I think if you watch that primetime show and just the draw of the heavyweight championship, we'll see if that still means anything to people, because mm-hmm. it's going to be a very good fight, I feel.
It won't be a boring fight. They're smart to choose something like that.
It's too bad that... they couldn't have done it a few weeks earlier, and they could have had the UFC Halloween contest where they could bob for apples and do the pumpkin pass.
That would have been great.
So we start the show off with Mean Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan, and Bobby Heenan is in a weasel outfit.
He's in a Jimmy Crockett outfit with one of those hats.
Yes. I wonder if this was a... Was it Jimmy Crockett or Davy Crockett?
Oh, Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
Jimmy Crockett.
Jimmy Crockett was the rival promoter at the time. And they're practicing for the apple bobbing contest coming up later, where it would be team heels against team baby faces. And they mentioned that the main event for this show will be Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant taking on King Kong Bundy and Big John Studd. And Heenan starts smashing a bunch of pumpkins here in the opening. And we see Hulk Hogan cut a promo along with Andre the Giant, who walks in, and they simply head off. And it's just a lot of, like, kind of quick promos to start the show off. Mm-hmm. Jesse Ventura's with Roddy Piper, who's in a mock Superman outfit with an R on his chest.
Yeah.
He's Super Rod. Mm-hmm. And then Okerlund welcomes in two newcomers, Terry Funk and Jimmy Hart. And Funk is going to be taking on the Junkyard Dog, and this could lead to a title shot against Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan had only had the title since January of this year. This was the year one of the Hulk Hogan title reign that would last until 1988.
Wow.
So
amazing.
Sorry, this was year two. He won it in 84.
Okay.
So anyway, Oakland says that there is no place for this branding iron in wrestling. And Funk spits his tobacco into the camera, and then we go into the opening credits.
Yes, to the tune of Obsession by Animotion. I don't know about you, John, but I always know this as the theme song for fashion television up here in Canada.
I've never watched fashion television, so the connection was not made by me.
Okay. My brother used to always... My brother's a photographer, so he'd always have this on. And I just... from childhood, I knew this song as a theme song to fashion TV.
I had a lot of songs stuck in my head after watching this show.
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon does the intro. They show fans and costumes in the audience. Imagine that, spending Halloween night going to a wrestling show, which is what's going to happen, did happen this past Monday on Raw.
That would be awesome. These kids were missing out on a lot of candy, but...
Could you imagine taking your little kid to wrestling rather than taking them out trick-or-treating on Halloween night?
What's wrong with that?
I just feel it's like...
It's a once-in-a-life... Not a once-in-a-lifetime, but, I mean, once-a-year deal. Whereas you can go trick-or-treating every year. Any year.
Trick-or-treating is a once-a-year deal. Halloween happens once a year.
Yeah, but you can go any year. Whereas the WWE is only at your city.
I think there was a lot of selfish parents that wanted to go themselves and drag their kids.
Okay.
And ruined Halloween for them.
I don't think these kids had anything ruined. They looked to be having a pretty good time.
This might have been shot during the day. That would make a lot of sense, actually.
Sure. Or they could have gone trick-or-treating during the day.
They do the intro. They run down the card. And Vince mentions tonight will be the debut of the very first WWF music video.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down here, thumbs up show, 10 out of 10, right at this announcement. Welcomes in Jesse Ventura, and they recap the Uncle Elmer wedding from the last Saturday night's main event. And then they show highlights of Terry Funk attacking a ring attendant at a recent show. And then we go back to Okerlund with Terry Funk and Jimmy Hart. It felt like it had just been 5 minutes since Okerlund interviewed them once. This was interview number two. And Hart calls it television tricks. Television tricks.
Yeah.
Terry never attacked anybody. You do this stuff all the time.
CG, Photoshop, sure.
You know, we worked with a woman once who... totally believed you could do just anything in the editing room, you know, where she would hi, my name is so and so. Oh, okay, just cut this all together. And we are here at the blank blank hotel. Oh, darn. I'm gonna just do a pickup, just edit this all together, and today we're gonna be talking to so and so.
Yeah.
You can edit all that together, right? Just make it work.
Yeah, this was one of the more abysmal TV experiences John and I have had with this woman who just knew nothing about anything, but
she came from radio, which explained a lot.
And the people that were producing her, like, we've ran into so many people that are just, they want to make a TV show. Ah, they want to make TV. Let's toss all this money in there.
Our instructions were make this good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was awful.
So
I choose not to remember it, and I never thought I would ever talk about it again, especially on this podcast.
Saturday night's main event. Well,
yeah.
Like workers going to WCW, we were at least smart enough way that we knew this project was probably not going to be a gigantic success, so we just asked for a lot of money, thinking they'd say no, and instead they said, sure.
What are you talking about?
For our rate, when we worked on that project together.
Oh, yeah, so and they said, sure. So then I did my work and awaited my pay, and it never came. Yeah, there you go.
We were more like indie workers.
Yeah.
Okay. No one is going to know what we're talking about. So let's get back to things that people care about. Funk calls JYD dog meat and that they have some branding to do. Then they recap the last Funk JYD match from the summer of 85 at Madison Square Garden, where Funk attacked JYD with the branding iron. And then Okerlund is with JYD, who says that every dog has his day. And today is his day.
Good line.
Yep.
Good line.
That leads us to our first match. Now, I don't know how much crowd noise was piped in, but this crowd sounded hot from start to finish. This felt like a hot product.
It was amazing. Heat was amazing, and JYD just seemed so, like, superstar level.
He was just at another level here. I mean, everyone, the crowd was reacting to everybody on this show, and goddamn, did they sit through some terrible matches, but they were just so into these characters.
But terrible matches back then,
that was the norm in this company.
Yeah, and
WWF was never known in the mid-80s for putting on classic matches. I mean, it was a big man style and very bare bones.
And if this audio was believable, was legit, then it all worked. It didn't need to have good matches.
JYD pulls Funk into the ring with his gear on, and the crowd is just going nuts here. Crotches Terry on the top rope, and then Jimmy Hart retreats under the ring as JYD goes after them. Funk comes back in with a body slam, but then misses an elbow drop, and JYD responds with a slam, dumps him to the floor, and then Funk goes to attack Jimmy Hart because Funk is all disoriented here from the throw to the floor. JYD hits a number of headbutts on the mat, which was kind of his trademark. JYD then chases after Jimmy Hart, grabs him by the jacket, but then Funk runs into a back body drop on the floor. Funk gets the heat with a series of jabs and then into a sleeper hold. JYD gets to the ropes, and then it is JYD who tosses Jimmy Hart into the ring, but Funk, with the referee distracted with Jimmy, hits JYD with the megaphone, and Terry Funk pins JYD. This went 5 minutes and 11 seconds. And afterwards, Funk and Jimmy are attacking JYD. They go to brand him, but Junkyard Dog stops them, sends Terry Funk to the floor, and then he decks Jimmy as the crowd is all into Jimmy Hart getting his comeuppance here. Mm-hmm. And there's a tug of war between Funk and JYD with Jimmy in the middle, and JYD pulls Jimmy's pants down and brands his bare ass.
I don't know if it was bare, was it?
Well, he lifted underwear. His tights up so that it was an ass cheek that got branded.
How do you brand somebody with a cold iron?
It was all in the selling here. Jimmy sold it as if it was piping hot.
Okay, cool. It's
that it was just
anyway,
ink.
Crowd ate it up. They loved this. Absolutely loved it. I'd like to ask you, why do you think JYD never had a serious title run?
In the WWF?
Yeah.
His work was really bad, and cocaine. Those would be my two go-tos. I mean, he was coming off, like, in Mid-South. I mean, this guy, he was always booked, he was a mid-card babyface in WWF, but when he was booked by Bill Watts in Mid-South, I mean, he was a gigantic star. He was mm-hmm. the biggest babyface in that territory. I mean, they filled the Superdome with it, with Junkyard Dog, and that was kind of Vince's game plan, was going to all these different territories, taking the top guys, and it was like putting together this all-star territory where up and down the card you had proven main event guys. And Junkyard Dog, I mean, he was the top guy in Mid-South, and then he came in and, you know, he was like, you know, number three or four babyface at one point under Hogan and Andre. So I just don't think he was ever that level of a talent that you could have built your national company around. I don't think anyone ever saw him in that role in the WWF, and he had a lot of he liked the party, as did many guys on this roster at this point. Then we started the Halloween party contest, and this would be broken up into three rounds, with one team captained by Bobby Heenan and the other by Lou Albano, the late Lou Albano. And the first one was a pie-eating contest, and they introduce us to all of the talent in costumes. Just imagine Vince just picking out costumes for all these guys. We had Randy Savage and Elizabeth dressed up as Tarzan and Jane, Nikolai Volkoff as the Boy Wonder Robin. As we mentioned, Heenan was Davy Crockett. King Kong Bundy was Abraham Lincoln with a big beard and a top hat. Iron Sheik as Batman, as 1960s Batman.
Oh, that was the greatest. Iron Sheik as Batman. Whoever chose these costumes has definitely a sense of humor.
This was so great. You can look at reviewaway.com. The profile picture features Iron Sheik in this costume. I just died laughing seeing Iron Sheik as Batman. I wanted a skit with Volkoff and Sheik.
Oh, man.
Just imagine these two as the crime fighters.
Yeah, with the words. Pow. Boom.
Batman, motherfucker. Tito Santana on the babyface side was dressed as Zorro. Hulk Hogan was Hercules, not the wrestler. Uh-huh. Lou Albano was Julius Caesar. And then we had Uncle Elmer, Hillbilly Jim, and Cousin Junior as the Three Musketeers. The baby faces were not quite as funny as the heels.
No.
So the rules here was that the most pies eaten in 90 seconds between Albano and Bundy would be the winner of round one. And they ruled Albano as the winner. This was just 30 seconds of guys eating pies.
They weren't even really eating. It was just scooping and putting,
going all over their face.
Yeah.
The interesting part is that King Kong Bundy went from Abraham Lincoln stuffing his face with pies to main eventing WrestleMania the following April.
Yeah.
Quite the leap.
Hey, the big guys can always seem like a threat no matter what they do.
Then we go to an edition of Piper's Pit with the Hillbillies, Uncle Elmer, Cousin Junior, and Hillbilly Jim. And they recap the wedding from the previous Saturday night's main event, where Uncle Elmer got married on Saturday night's main event in the middle of the ring. And Piper came out during that segment, said that all of them stunk. And Piper comes out here into the ring with Cowboy Bob Orton. Piper insults them, asks what happened on the wedding night. And Elmer says, "None of your business." He starts asking about family planning, and then they get upset and they stand up to Piper. And Piper blames Jesse Ventura for what was said during the wedding segment while Ventura was on commentary. And Ventura is called to the ring. He gets in. He says, "I stand by what I said." And then they tip Cousin Junior over a bent over Orton, and he falls down, and it leads to a fight. The heels escape, and they stomp on Jesse Ventura's hat.
Mm-hmm.
Again, crowd loved this.
Yeah, they did. They seemed to love everything. I didn't really know the storylines here. I didn't know who these hillbillies were.
That was it. They were just hillbillies.
Okay.
That one of them got married, and they were offended by this arrogant heel and his sidekick.
What were they building towards for these shows?
Well, in this case, they were building to a tag match for the next Saturday night's main event.
And
which
when would that have been? Like in a couple weeks or the next month?
I think it would have been before the end of the year. Let's look this up.
Not Survivor Series? Oh, yeah, Survivor Series wasn't around back then.
No.
Yeah.
Saturday night's main event number 4 would have been... Oh, it wouldn't have...
March. Or January.
Okay, January.
Yeah.
So we have...
Wow, so wrestling fans have to wait that long.
So, yeah, it was Jesse Ventura, Roddy Piper, and Cowboy Bob Orton against Hillbilly Jim, Uncle Elmer, and Cousin Luke. And it would, yeah, not air till January.
Amazing.
So, that's great. We move over then to round 2 of the Halloween contest. It's the pumpkin dunk. 200 gallons of chocolate syrup filled with pumpkins, floating pumpkins. Way.
Never heard of a pumpkin dunk before.
I've heard of an apple bob, but not this. And
how do you fit a pumpkin into your mouth?
Well, you've got to bite the stem and then pull it out. Terrible for your teeth.
Yeah.
Like you're biting into this giant stem and then lifting a heavy pumpkin with your teeth. Oh, horrendous.
And all that chocolate. Oh, you can get a cavity.
Terrible. So we had JYD was in a mummy outfit, and then Cousin Junior arrives from the previous segment. So we have Cousin Luke Jr. against Bobby Heenan, and Heenan's got Savage in his corner, and Cousin Junior has JYD in his corner. This was just gross. I mean, the hillbilly had chocolate syrup all over his big beard and hair. It just, how gross.
It's funny.
Heenan got the win here. He got 7 pumpkins to the hillbilly's 4. So we have a 1-1 tie going into round 3. Who would have thought?
Yeah, but they're both non-wrestlers, that one.
Yes. Vince then plugs the next match as possibly the best tag match in history. And that would be Hogan and Andre against Studd and Bundy. But first, Okerlund is with Heenan, Studd, and Bundy. And Heenan brags about the pumpkin win. And all that was separated here was a commercial break, and Heenan was all cleaned up and in a different outfit.
Yeah.
It's as if this was taped out of order.
It was as if it was that. He still had some chocolate stains all over his face, so.
Studd promises to prove that they are the best tag team tonight. And then we go to Hogan, Andre, and Lou Albano with Okerlund. And Hogan calls Andre the 8th, 9th, and 10th wonder of the world. And Andre says, no more talking, and ends the promo.
Short and sweet.
And just 30 minutes into the show, we go to our main event with Hogan and Andre with Lou Albano.
It could be because they're trying to hit maybe 12.
Yeah,
o'clock.
Yeah, that would be it. This was their weekend update.
Mm-hmm.
And Studd and Bundy come out along with Heenan. Crowd is chanting Weasel at Heenan. And the babyfaces actually came out to Eye of the Tiger here.
Yeah.
So not real American at this point in time.
Not yet.
And Hogan is in white trunks here. So this was almost like a different version of who Hulk Hogan would become.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan and Bundy start the match. Hogan with a flying knee and then goes for a body slam. Right away starts selling his back. This is the precursor to the back problems he would have years later. Then tags in Andre after Bundy runs into the corner. Andre is choking Bundy with his own singlet. And then Studd attacks Hogan from the apron and the heels get the advantage. This is when Ventura is on commentary and he sets up the Saturday night's main event angle to team with Piper against the Hillbillies. Andre is then striking Studd in the corner and accidentally knocks down the referee. And then all 4 are in the ring. Babyfaces clear the ring. And then there's a bear hug spot by Andre to Studd. And this was 1985. And, man, Andre was just so limited, even in a tag match. I mean, it was very hard to hide this guy. But, incredibly over.
Yeah, I would say, though, still quite mobile compared to, you know, his later years.
Andre gets knocked off the apron and his arms are trapped in the ropes as Bundy drops Hogan. And the bell is then called, just around 5 minutes. And Hogan makes the comeback as Andre frees himself from the ropes. The babyfaces fight off the heels. And then Okerlund gets in the ring. And Hogan says they proved that they couldn't beat Andre. And Andre then cuts this promo that is completely incoherent. I have no idea what he said.
In front of this capacity crowd, Andre, tell us about it.
I didn't get enough.
You didn't get
enough. I want to get some more. Come back here. I'm not finished with you guys. We're not finished yet.
Hulk Hogan, they said it was the dream team, and indeed you proved that.
Hey, we proved one point. They can't beat Andre the Giant fairly. It takes two of them. They will never beat Andre the Giant. And they're not going to beat either. No, no, no. I'm going to get a chance to win. Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it from Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan. Andre said he has not had enough.
They come from me against us. I charge everywhere. They be pounding the wall.
And Hogan was basically his translator here after the match. Very, very hot crowd, but no real finality here.
Yeah, but the crowd didn't really care. They just wanted to see their
heroes. They wanted to see the stars and beat the heels.
Absolutely.
Vince goes to the Halloween party in the back, and then he throws to the new music video, the Land of a Thousand Dances by the WWF Superstars. And I just wrote here, let Way explain this video.
Well, How do you explain this?
I don't know.
It was just all
great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was just all the wrestlers in this auditorium singing along, gathered around, sing to this song. You had Meatloaf on drums.
Meatloaf was in this video. Yeah. What a coup.
Rick Derringer was playing guitar. And apparently Cyndi Lauper was in there somewhere as well.
Oh, I missed Lauper. Yeah,
so they're all there. Derringer plays shreds a solo. And these wrestlers sing individual lines in the song. And then they cut promos towards
yes.
the end. And they just start tearing the set apart. And then they start to fight. And I wish they would do these once a year. Once a year. What a great way to commemorate the current roster.
Imagine how many of the old timers were watching in 1985, watching the heels and baby faces here in this music video together, in this obvious staged... I was going to sneeze there. In this, like, staged environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this was sacrilege in 1985.
Well, sure. Sure.
Heels and baby faces on a music video set together.
Hey, but they ended up fighting at the end.
But how many takes did they do together? It's like this was not in the heat of the moment.
Well, good question. Yep. But could you imagine them doing this once a year with like whatever hit of the day, of the year? Like
they tried it a few years ago with Timbaland.
Oh, with the girls?
Yeah.
Nah, the girls don't count. They didn't even sing. They should do one with the full roster. Like doing like I Got a Feeling or something for the Black Eyed Peas, and then they'll each do it in their own voice, and then they'll cut promos at the end of it.
And have Meatloaf in it.
Have Meatloaf in it. Why not?
This was very fun. I enjoyed this video a lot. Mm-hmm. And this was the WWF. They were hip at the time with MTV. It just launched in what, 84?
Maybe earlier, but something like that. Yeah.
So this is great. Gene Okerlund is then with Randy Savage and Elizabeth getting ready for the IC title match against Tito Santana. And Randy Savage had just chosen Elizabeth to be his manager at the time. And Okerlund asks Elizabeth, why professional wrestling? Liz says, well, I always had an interest in sports, and that's why she chose this profession. And Savage says that he is ready, able, and willing, and to never ask a question like that again to Okerlund. And they cut to the break. And they come back, and Savage had gotten his entrance, but Tito did not. The Intercontinental Champion, no entrance.
Yeah.
He was like a CM Punk of 1985.
Hey, you only have so much TV time.
Can't waste it on a champion.
No.
So that was our next match, Tito defending the Intercontinental title against Randy Savage. Santana hits a hip toss, but then misses an elbow drop. Savage comes off the top with an axe handle, and crowd was heavily into Santana as he tries to get out of a reverse chin lock. Savage comes off the top rope, but gets punched in the midsection, and then we see a knee lift as Santana gets on the offensive. Savage retreats to the floor, and Santana chases. They fight by the barricade, then come back in the ring, exit once again, and it ends with Santana knocked off the apron to the floor. And Savage goes for a pile driver onto the cement, but it is stopped by Santana, and this results in a double countout at 4 minutes and 9 seconds and was the fastest 10 count I've ever heard in a wrestling context.
You know, they seemed very protective of their wins and losses back then. They didn't want to give anything away on TV.
Yeah, which was kind of the formula for Saturday night's main event would kind of evolve, because in later years it would be there would be a feud that they would, you know, they'd set up the angle on TV, then they'd take it around to all of the house shows, and when they had finished the house show run of the few drawing on the road, then they'd have it on Saturday night's main event, and that would be the end of the feud, and they'd move on to something else. So Saturday night's main event was the last time they'd meet after they had drawn in all of the cities.
I see.
But at this point, yeah, this would continue, and Savage would eventually win the Intercontinental title just a few months later. From there, we go to, the Kung Fu Challenge.
Yes.
Stereotypes at its all-time high.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Fuji is preparing by twisting his temples in a violent manner. And then we see Ricky Steamboat breaking wooden boards.
Mm-hmm. The Kung Fu Challenge.
This was modern mixed martial arts here. Kung Fu.
Sure it was.
So we go to the back, and they show the heels who were practicing for the pumpkin pass, but the they didn't really explain what they were doing, so it looked like these male wrestlers were making out with each other, where they'd lean in, and it looked like they were kissing each other.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know what was going on.
I couldn't tell either. It was one of the most homoerotic things I'd ever seen on a wrestling show.
Then we went to this segment that I thought was horrible. Roddy Piper at his home for Halloween, and there's a cardboard cutout of Piper, and he's designing these bowling balls with sticks that he's going to secretly hand out, thinking these kids will believe that they are lollipops.
Candy apples. Yeah.
But they're bowling balls, and he is disguising bricks as candy bars. So who should show up on Halloween night but Vince McMahon? And Piper explains that in Scotland, it's trick or treat, and he can do whatever he wants with candy, and says, if they bother me once, they won't bother me twice. And, like, Piper, I can almost guarantee, did this entire promo on some substance. The kids ring the doorbell. He welcomes the kids in. One's dressed as Hulk Hogan. I don't want to criticize a kid, but... horrible acting here by this kid. This was scripted
these
promos
are just
at
kids.
Their worst. Okay,
these are,
fine.
These are
we'll
give him
a pass, but whatever. It wasn't great. Bad promo from the kid. Piper breaks their bags with the bowling balls, and then he gives them some other candy, and the kids leave their candy in Piper's home. So Piper thinks he's got one over on the kids because he's got all their candy, and he goes to eat one of the candies, and we cut to the kids outside, who say, I hope Roddy enjoys those chocolate-covered red peppers. And we hear Piper yell at this hot pepper he has just eaten. Hilarity.
What an idiot. Opening that wrapper and then...
stupid heel.
Still
tricks
eating?
Are for kids.
Exactly. You know, I thought this was fun. It was really campy.
I'm all for camp. Believe me, this show was all about camp, but I didn't get it. There's nothing funny about this site. It was just dragged, and I didn't enjoy it.
Okay.
So, McMahon, then we go back to real time here, and McMahon is with Hulk Hogan, who is happy that the kids outsmarted Piper. And then we go back to Okerlund with Mr. Fuji, who is chopping bricks.
Boards.
Bricks. No, he had bricks.
He had bricks. Wow. Okay.
And he chopped them with his hand.
Well, he's a kung fu master.
So Mr. Fuji comes out. Oh, and he broke a board on his head. Mr. Fuji comes out with Don Morocco in his corner. And Okerlund is with Ricky Steamboat. And Okerlund, with a straight face, tells Ricky Steamboat, the Mid-Atlantic legend, the man who helped be one of the biggest tag team draws in the Carolinas, says that this Kung Fu challenge with Mr. Fuji is, quote, perhaps one of the most important matches of your career. And they show the angle of Morocco and Fuji choking Ricky Steamboat and hanging him over the top rope at a recent event. And this leads to the Kung Fu challenge with Fuji and Steamboat. Vince says that the rules will be different, but they never explain what the rules are of this Kung Fu challenge. And the rules were... it's a normal match. That's about it. Mr. Fuji delivered this kick, and it was just... we can rag on Kelly Kelly and some of the offense she delivers. This was a whole new world of horrible. And Ricky Steamboat had to sell for this guy, like this little 55-year-old Asian man,
yeah,
versus like a prime, fit Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, what entails the kung fu in this kung fu challenge is that they start off the match with their hands in chop knife formation, like just blades, and then they just do the regular match. That's all.
This allowed Fuji to have an arm twist, and an elbow to the back of Fuji would knock him down. Fuji with another kick and a headbutt to the groin, and then he would chop Steamboat.
And for as hot as this crowd was for this entire show, they were dying for this match.
This was really bad.
They were not reacting to any of these stupid karate moves. They looked like kids doing Bruce Lee impressions.
Vince actually said, two evenly matched individuals.
Sure.
This, like, buried Steamboat here. Like, this is supposed to be a...
Hey, but
okay.
But in terms of Kung Fu, maybe Fuji is
well,
even more...
Well, the way they laid out the match, it was booked like 50-50. Like, this was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't, theoretically, this be building to a Steamboat-Morocco match where Steamboat runs through the manager who finally gets his... what's coming to him? Like, that's... this would be like booking Michael Cole and... Jesus.
Jack Swagger. Or
like
somebody building towards Jack Swagger.
A solid mid-card babyface. Randy Orton and Michael Cole being booked to go 50-50.
Right.
Like, this made no sense.
Hey, but at the time, was Mr. Fuji still not recognized as a former wrestler?
A former wrestler who could barely move here. I mean, it was up there. I mean, Fuji was never a great wrestler or anything by any stretch. And, I mean, this was just, I don't know. I just thought it was silly, even by 1985 standards. Fuji's offense, we saw a hip toss by Fuji. And Ventura notes that in martial arts, it's not always the younger guys that prevail. And then we see a vertical suplex by Steamboat. And they acknowledge that wrestling is allowed in this match as Steamboat goes to the top rope and in his Kung Fu 101 hit a top rope drop kick for the win. 3 minutes and 16 seconds. And then right after the match, Morocco throws something into the eyes of Steamboat and blinds him.
He misses him.
Did he miss him?
Yeah, missed.
Oh, missed him.
Yeah.
Oh.
Sprays missed.
Oh, I didn't know what it was. So Steamboat is blinded. They double team him. And that's how this ends. So the feud continues. And then Okerlund is in the back with Elizabeth to demonstrate the pumpkin pass. And I don't know, was this some kind of like joke to get Elizabeth and Gene Okerlund into some awkward sexual tension?
Or Miss Elizabeth and anybody else.
They put Elizabeth in quite the Jane outfit where she didn't have pants. It's just her legs.
Okay.
I'm certain Vince had something for Elizabeth.
I wouldn't doubt that. She's the only woman. I guess. Only valet. Maybe the most attractive woman.
And then we get the finals of the Halloween contest, and McMahon and Ventura break down the challenges from tonight. And it leads to the pumpkin pass. Ventura is watching on. The babyfaces go first here, and Ventura claims that the babyfaces are using their capes to use their hands and disguise what's happening here and cheat. And the babyfaces get 5 successful passes of the pumpkin, where you had to lodge the pumpkin between your, like, on your neck, underneath your chin, and
throat.
Like your collarbone,
yeah.
And pass it to the next guy who could not use his hands. Who came up with this?
I don't know. I'm sure it's been played.
This was so weird. So then the heels go second, and they actually do use their capes to hide the fact that they're passing it along, and still they fail. They only make 4 passes, and Elizabeth drops the pumpkin, and Savage just berates Elizabeth for dropping the pumpkin and therefore dropping the ball.
He looked like he was about to beat her.
It looked very uncomfortable. It was not a happy Halloween.
Yeah.
So then McMahon, Ventura, and Okerlund wrap up the show. Ventura says that he and Piper want the Hillbillies at the next Saturday night's main event. They go to a break. They come back, and we get the next extra for the show with just Vince and Ventura. With Vince literally, this was all they said, "Well, I had a great time." And then they throw to the credits, which was a... underneath, we got to hear the Monster Mash.
Yes, yes we did.
This was like just such a different product at this time. This was really fun.
This felt like SNL. It felt like SNL.
Yeah, it really did.
With some TV, with some wrestling matches thrown in. Could you imagine if Raw went off the air with like...
It was
Michael
the
Cole,
Mash.
With Michael Cole and King. Well, that was a great, great...
I had a great time.
I had a great time.
This was not meant to do any heavy-duty angles. It was supposed to be a fun 90-minute show on Halloween.
Meant to draw ratings.
And you know what? It was like, man, you had such a vast array of characters.
Yeah.
Like, you had so many different characters. And that's what I really loved about it.
And people who knew exactly how to portray those characters because they created them. And people that were just seasoned for TV, I felt.
Yeah, you just had such dynamic performers, and this was just a really fun show. you know, very campy, but that's what I expected going into this. And I give this show a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, okay then. So that was it, everyone. The third ever Saturday Night's Main Event from the Hershey Park Arena from October 31st of 1985. And compare that to Raw this past Monday and the Halloween-themed edition.
Hmm.
There was no Vince on that show doing the Monster Mash or Land of a Thousand Dances.
You don't know that, John.
Well, all right, let's go to feedback. Didn't get a lot of people watching this show. It was hard to find. It was very hard to find this show. It's not one that's, you know, people's mental Rolodex really focuses on this show. It's a tough one to go out of your way to see. Ross Bowler writes, I thought this was such a fun show to watch. The WWE I found was just so unique with its over-the-top characters. It's amazing. So many guys from that 80s era are remembered today. Bobby Heenan is, as usual, a classic. I like Roddy's trick-or-treat segment the best.
Okay. Nabil Susi, who criticizes me calling him Nick. Did I call you Nick? I'm sorry. Don't know how I would make that mistake. What a show it was. The first thing I thought was how much of an awesome horror villain Andre the Giant would have been during the 80s. Him standing there with that voice and the music from Halloween could have been terrifying. The WWF had one hell of a roster back then. I mean, there may have only been five of them, but they had the collective weight of 500. It was strange to see Hogan sans red and yellow. It was even stranger to see Hogan capable of lateral motion. Andre in the main event further convinced me that this man could have been one scary SOB had he been given a film role. Chris Kenner does not get enough praise in my opinion. Well, now I know why. Who cares about Chris Kenner when a bunch of wrestlers managed to outperform him on his very own song? This video was just too great to try and review, and this needs to be seen.
I agree. Let's go to David Banks. A lot can be said about this era in WWE wrestling, but if I had to sum it up in one word, that word would have to be fun. The Rock and wrestling era proved that pro wrestling can be mainstream and provide talk on entertainment news outlets like MTV. Saturday Night's Main Event was a breakthrough for the business. Pro wrestling could now be shown on a major network station and be watched by millions. Coming off the success of the first WrestleMania, the groundwork was laid out to take the next step for acceptance. Did Saturday Night's Main Event have cheesy bits? Yes, but it also provided main event matches which we couldn't have seen anywhere else on WWE television. It was like how the Clash of Champions was to the NWA WCW, a pay-per-view on free television. And when you think about it, maybe today's wrestling should take notes from the 80s and trim down the pay-per-views and add a few Saturday Night's Main Events. Well, we said that off the top. I just don't... This worked for the time period, but in today's era of, 4 hours between Raw and SmackDown, it's another 2 hours or 90 minutes. No one's going out of their way to watch a Saturday Night's Main Event in today's culture.
It's too much. Ben Brisebois. Stephanie McMahon was actually on the show. She was the little girl in Piper's skit wearing the costume which totally covered her face.
I had no clue.
No idea. Anyways, this was a good show. Almost all of the wrestling sucked, but it wasn't the point anyway. Super cheesy music video. Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper giving out bricks and bowling balls to kids. The evil Iron Sheik as an ultimate American hero like Batman. Pie-eating contests and bobbing for pumpkins. At times, WWE still tries for this level of camp with Cena, Hornswoggle, Oksana, etc., but I think we're more willing to accept it if it's from the 80s and not when they try it today.
So there we go. A brief amount of feedback this week, but thanks to those of you that did go back and watch this. You can always leave your feedback at reviewaway.com, facebook.com/reviewaway.
Is there nothing else?
I don't think so. I printed off this morning, so...
Oh, okay.
Oh, do we have more?
Yeah, we have like a bunch more.
Oh. Never mind, folks. Why don't you go to the next one and I'll pull it up.
Oh, we only have two more, actually. Never mind.
No, read it. Why not? We didn't have a lot this week.
Corey Ferreira. This is a fun show when WWF could do this kind of stuff and have it fit in their product at the same time. The Halloween skits are just fun. The heels versus faces Halloween games are fun to watch, and seeing Elizabeth in her jungle outfit is a great sight. Piper's Halloween Funhouse is great, and Piper was great in this role with his interview with Vince with the red bow tie and all. I agree that this needs Stephanie McMahon in her 2002 witch costume. She's on the show as one of the kids, which we just talked about. Overall, just a fun show, not to be taken seriously. And we get to see Elizabeth in her jungle gear, so it's a win for me.
And finally, Steve Kasson. I missed these themed shows. It was fun and got into the theme of everything. Yes, they might have been corny and cheesy, but at least they kept up with the season. I would say it was kind of special. The most recent one I can think of is when TNA did their Turkey Bowl challenge or something like that. Aside from that, what can you say about a straightforward and funny episode of Saturday Night's Main Event? Do you think WWE, TNA, etc. should go back to these themed shows? Now, as I said, the only one in recent memory I can remember is TNA's Turkey Bowl thing, so if either Raw, SmackDown, and Impact have done shows in recent years, apologies, and a Divas Bikini Contest does not count. You know, it didn't have anything to do with a holiday, but the old school Raw last year was very successful, I thought. I think once a year you could absolutely do that.
Yeah, I like these. It makes them stand out from the usual, you know. Unless, of course, you know, you have other priorities. Like if it's a go-home show for a pay-per-view.
Yes.
Maybe if that gets in the way, then maybe.
However, that actually was a go-home show, and that final segment was when Piper did this awesome promo in that final segment. Hmm. And I thought he just was fantastic on that show. So I never feel that, you know, doing a themed show can get in the way of, you know, on your go-home show. I think you can serve both in that kind of situation. But I think the WWE, you look at it, with all these three-hour Raws, I think at times they might overdo it on the themed shows, where for every old-school Raw, there's a lot of them that, I mean, don't really click with people anymore. But that really was all of your feedback, so thank you once again to everybody. We've got a lot of stuff coming up this week, Wei. Tomorrow, Thursday morning, we're going to have an interview up on the site that me and Wei conducted with former WWE creative team member Brian Mann, who is a part of the team this past summer, taking a lot of your questions. So that's going to be up Thursday morning. Friday, we'll be back with Review and Impact with myself and Wei Ting, chatting about James Storm versus Bobby Roode for the TNA title in Macon, Georgia. And we'll, of course, be joined by Nate Milton, get his thoughts on what's going on in Impact Wrestling Land. And, of course, Ronnie from the Jersey Shore is going to be appearing.
The Jersey Shore, not the Jersey.
It's finally fixed this past Monday. Yeah. 5 days, I got around to it. So that's all coming up. And then Sunday night, it's The Law on TSN Radio, 10:50 a.m. You can listen midnight Eastern time. Going to be joined by UFC welterweight champion George St. Pierre and taking a lot of your phone calls this coming Sunday as well. Anything else you want to plug, Wei? What's coming up in your world?
Not much. I'll be watching this weekend our next show that we want to review.
Oh, of course. Yes, next week, our review.
I'd like to stay in this decade. I had a lot of fun watching this show, and I'd like to stay here for our next review, which will be the very first Survivor Series in 1987.
Yeah, this was a really interesting show because the way this came about was the NWA was running their Starrcade event on pay-per-view that year. They were leaving Greensboro for the first year with Starrcade to go to Chicago, and it was going to be airing nationally on pay-per-view, and it was expected to be a huge money draw for the company. And Vince McMahon decided to run a pay-per-view rather on that same night, and he basically, at first, all the cable companies were actually all in favor of this, saying we'll have one in the afternoon, the other at night, and we can do a deal where you pay and get both events, and it's a whole day of wrestling on Thanksgiving. And Vince went to them, he said, no, you either get my event or you get their event, and if you choose their event, you can't carry WrestleMania next year. And it resulted in, I think, four cable companies stuck with Starrcade and all the rest. Four markets, I think, and everyone else picked Survivor Series, and it really was a crippling blow to Jim Crockett Promotions.
That is amazing. That's an amazing bit of
It's a very historically significant show, and that was the birth of the Survivor Series.
So we'll be doing the show tomorrow and next week. And like you mentioned, WrestleMania, this was the show that was following WrestleMania 3. So in our main event, we have Hulk Hogan leading his team versus Andre the Giant. And
Team Hogan versus Team Andre.
There you go.
Yep, and this would be their first meeting since WrestleMania 3. On pay-per-view. So that's going to come up next week when we review the 1987 Survivor Series. So try and give it a watch and post some feedback. And we are going to go out here with what else but Land of a Thousand Dances as we end things off. Thanks a lot for listening.
Down your spine. I don't talk too good, but my pigs talk a whole lot better.
Okay, that's enough.